Hey folks, Josh Reeves here to remind you that the Global Reality is a 100% publicly funded operation that relies on the monthly support of our listeners for survival. We don't have paid advertisements or commercial sponsors who can ever dictate the content of our work. Donations can be made through PayPal by using my PayPal email address, daglow76@yahoo.com. That's daglow76@yahoo.com. Or on the Cash App by using the cash tag Reeves Radio. All lowercase, one word, Reeves Radio on the Cash App. You can also purchase all of my work in my download store with all the films, audiobooks, and presentations I have made. And purchasing these items also helps us survive. You can also purchase a membership for the show and access years of archived shows. Support true grassroots media and activism, not beholden to commercial sponsors. We can't survive without you, so show your support today.
Since 2007, one man has dared to expose the sinister power players on all sides of the phony political spectrum. Armed with over 30 years of research knowledge of the paranormal, government conspiracies, geopolitics, secret and ancient societies, the esoteric arts, and much more, one man's quest for knowledge has become a mission for the enlightenment of all people. Broadcasting from the conspiracy ground zero of Dallas, Texas, this is the Global Reality with your host, Josh Reeves.
All right, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the show. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. It is Tuesday, September 24th, 2024. This is our 17-year anniversary week, guys. We're celebrating 17 years on air this week. So please donate, daglow76@yahoo.com. Reeves Radio, all lowercase, one word, Reeves Radio on Cash App, and capital J, Josh, dash, capital R, Reeves, dash, 6-1 on Venmo. I had to spend all the available funds we had to keep the internet and the power on, and right now I'm just trying to eat and not starve to death this week, okay? That's our 17-year anniversary. We have to raise, our fundraising time of the month starts next week, and we have to raise $1,300 by Monday, October 7th, at the latest. I can push until then. I mean, really, you got to have it by the 5th, but I can push it until the 7th. So, just keep that in mind. That's what we have to raise by Monday, October 7th, is $1,300, okay? My two newest films. A lot of people don't realize I put two new films out last week, not just one. The two newest films I have out now are The Simulation Theory film. Please get a copy of that one if you haven't. Don't overlook that film. It's a great film. And, of course, my film that was 8 years in the making and finally came to fruition, Anunnaki the Movie. It's available in the standard edition. That's around 52 minutes. And the extended cut with 47 additional minutes of content. And I'm just buy one or the other, or Simulation Theory, or any other film. Just everybody, just buy one, at least one download this week, okay? Of a movie, not a show or something. Buy a movie download, at least one this week. Everybody, if you're hearing this, buy at least one download. Donate whatever you can. $100 is our goal this week. I You know, I don't always do extended director's cuts for every film, but I'll tell you my reasoning behind doing this one. Well, I really, like I said, it's, you know, it's easy to make a long film. It's easy to throw everything, but you know, including the kitchen sink in there and call it a day. And to me, that's lazy filmmaking. And so I like to make, I don't make the super long epic films anymore. I mean, Lost Secrets of Ancient America, Volume 1 in 2013 was fucking almost 4 hours long. That was a stupid fucking movie. I mean, it was my biggest selling film ever, but even still. One thing I've learned from making films is how to make them more concise. So, in my opinion, honestly, the standard edition cut of Anunnaki the Movie, to me, that's my favorite version of the two. But I cut so much out of it to get it down under an hour. And some people, actually, believe it or not, like longer movies. Not everybody does, but some people do. So I said, you know what? I'm going to take the stuff I cut out, jam it back in there, and put out the extended cut just for those people who want that option of the longer film. So there you go. And then, like I said, you know, the artwork in this, everything on this movie, I mean, you know, I didn't just go to Google Images and pull the normal, you know, the same depictions of the Anunnaki, which are all just artist renderings done by people who were just guessing. How many people understand that? People think these same depictions they've seen of Anunnaki are the definitive, or they're not. And even the shit you see from the Sumerian days are stylized, you know, those are just stylized artwork of the day. I talk about that supposed wristwatch thing. Well, that was one of the things that was a big revelation for me. That whole thing is bullshit, by the way. There's no mention of that in the Sumerian text, just like there's no mention of Nibiru or gold mining or genetic manipulation. All that. That's all. I mean, talks about how the Anunnaki created humans, but the other stuff, that was all the Zechariah Sitchin creation bullshit. But anyway, like I said, it was really nice to make a film where I'm probably the only person that would ever make a film and ever will make a film on the Anunnaki that isn't encumbered by Zechariah Sitchin. You know, because he didn't invent that stuff. And that's what pissed me off in the early days. That's what led me to doing those Zechariah Sitchin readings on the show back in the day, was because I was trying to prove the point and show people that Zechariah Sitchin didn't invent the Anunnaki. And some people have falsely believed that because he made up so much other bullshit. He didn't make up the Anunnaki. The Anunnaki were actually the gods of the Sumerian religion. And that's what I really wanted to show people in this movie, is that that was their religion, guys. Like, people have Jesus and Muhammad and Buddha as the focal points of their religion. These gods like Anu and Enlil and Enki and Ereshkigal and her sister and all that stuff, those were the gods of the Sumerian religion. Yes, Zechariah Sitchin was paid by L. Ron Hubbard, just like he created his whole religion off of his science fiction writings. He did the same and paid Zechariah Sitchin to do the same because he thought if he had an actual biblical scholar saying this stuff, it would lead a religious credence to Scientology. And so, to be able to make a film where I'm unencumbered by that, and I'm not coming from the standpoint of Zechariah Sitchin, because I didn't even know who the fuck Zechariah Sitchin was when I first started reading about the Anunnaki in the mid-90s. I didn't know a goddamn thing about Zechariah Sitchin or anything like that. It wasn't until after I started this show in 2007 and started talking about the Anunnaki, people started throwing Zechariah Sitchin at me. I was like, Sitchin was wrong. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? I've never read cigarettes in my life. They're like, oh, yeah, you talk about the Anunnaki. He didn't invent it. Cigarettes didn't invent the Anunnaki. It's in those texts from 5,000 years ago. Carved into the cylinder seals in Sumeria and the tablets. That's where the Anunnaki stuff comes from. All the 12th planet stuff and the gold mining and all that, Nibiru, all that was the creation of L. Ron Hubbard, given to Zechariah Sitchin, who paid to have him for him to write his books. You know who else Scientology paid to write all their books and have them published? David Icke. That's facts. 100%. I mean, that was the whole point of my first Spellcasters Volume 1, 2016, was to show you that what we call the conspiracy world was whole called the creation of Scientology for a variety of reasons. That's why the whole Kennedy assassination stuff was always gone towards pushing everything towards looking at and blaming only the United States government and the CIA only, because they were wanting to deflect away from the fact that just weeks before the assassination in Dallas, Kennedy had Scientology offices raided, had all of their e-meters and all that stuff confiscated. And that was one of the things that hung him with the CIA, besides the Bay of Pigs and that whole thing, and his threat to, and his firing of Alan Dulles and Richard Bissell and all those guys, the sacred cows of the CIA, after he threatened to splinter the CIA into 1,000 pieces. So that work, I have to say, man, to this day, that work in Spell with Spellcasters, and you know, specifically Volume 1, that's probably one of the things I'm most proud of. Because I did what most people would never have the balls to do. Because I had to go after guys like Jim Mars, who were my earliest influences. You know, but there's no sacred cows in this for me. And there's no question about it that Jim Mars was connected to Scientology. But I still take it very seriously that both Jim Mars and Jordan Maxwell separately, on more than one occasion, and I think they conferred on this because they both did it several times, and Jim Mars, the last time I saw him, he did it again. I was like, man, don't fucking do this to me, Jim. Come on. Man, you know? But both of them did. You know, both of them took me aside separately and said, look, Josh, it's up to you. I was like, what do you mean? Jim said, well, you know, me and guys like Jordan Maxwell said, we're old. You know, we probably aren't going to be around much longer, and there's nobody coming up behind us to keep this work going. It's up to you. You got to do it. So that's what I've done. And I'm proud that I've done it, you know, now with 45 fucking films. Ties you to as the most prolific documentary filmmaker of all time. I mean, it's incredible. You know, I've taken that charge very seriously. So, you know, love me or hate me, I was given the mantle of carrying this work on by the guys who created the whole thing. I mean, Jesus fuck. I never thought when I was a teenager, first getting into this stuff, I'd ever find myself in a position where, you know, the godfathers of this stuff were literally passing the torch to me. But that's what happened, you know? So that's why I've taken this stuff and do take this stuff so seriously, and continuing this work on has become the mantle of my work, because, you know, I want to keep it going. And, you know, when when guys like that tell you, it's up to you. You know, I mean, Jordan Maxwell called me the greatest researcher of my generation. That's, you know, it's wild. But I'm really proud of this Anunnaki movie. I'm proud that it was tough. I don't think even when you watch this, you will understand how tough this movie was to make. To collate all that data on the individual gods and all that stuff, and that stuff took forever, man. The writing on that movie was so difficult, but it just, I make it look easy. You know, you watch it and you hear me doing the voiceovers, you don't you just don't know how many years that took to do. It was not easy. It was difficult. If it was easy, I would have already had it done by now. Please, please, please buy copies. Let me say, yesterday, the end of the show, did you guys fucking dig that track I played yesterday? I'll play it again today. Dude, this last week, it was like two crazy fucking covers out of nowhere that I didn't see coming. That one I played yesterday. You know who that was? That was Ice-T and Body Count with Dave Gilmour from fucking Pink Floyd on guitar, covering Pink Floyd's Comfortably Numb. Dude, holy fucking shit. That's one of the best covers I've ever heard in my life. So fuck. Oh my God, I've just always been a big fan of Ice-T and Body Count. I saw them back in the day, the first Lollapalooza. Was that 92? The very first one. I went to all the Lollapaloozas from the first one to 96 was the last time I went. But that year, it's interesting because James Addiction, they're in the news right now because Dave Navarro and Perry Farrell had a big blow up on stage, and Perry Farrell hit Dave Navarro. Those two guys have always hated each other. They've never got along. That's why they broke up the first time. You gotta figure, those guys have been a band like 40 years. I think they only have like 6 or 7 albums. Rush, it would have been like Rush or Kiss or something. Those guys had like 30 albums, you know. James Addiction have been around for like 40 years, they got like 6 or 7 albums, maybe. But Lollapalooza was Perry Farrell's brainchild, so that very first year in 92. Lollapalooza, that was James Addiction was the headliner that year, and Ice-T and Body Count were on that. They played early in the day and stuff. They were badass. Cop killer, better you than me. A fucking cop killer, and now we get even. I remember they were talking about, I was at the dinner table when I was with my grandparents one night, and they were, it was like Hard Copy or one of those shows was on. And they were talking about the song Cop Killer and Body Count and all that. And our grandpa goes, boy, you better not be listening to that Body Count Cop Killer stuff. Oh, no, granddaddy. No. I don't listen to any stuff like that.
Knowing damn well I had the CD sitting in the other room.
Oh, yeah, I damn sure did listen to that. Man, one of the most amazing performances I've ever seen. Pardon my French. I know I use this word less. I'm going to use it again, but I'm using it because I'm telling you a story of what happened. But there's a Sly and the Family Stone song called Don't Call Me Nigger Whitey. And the James Addiction's the headliners, so they're playing, and stage goes black, and you see this spotlight comes out, and you see Perry Farrell standing there, and all of a sudden you hear him, don't call me Whitey, nigger. And then a figure appears on the side of the stage, and there's spotlight, and then you hear, don't call me nigga, Whitey. And it's fucking Ice-T. And they're walking towards each other on the stage ominously, like they're about to fucking throw down. So, oh shit, these two motherfuckers are about to fight. Remember thinking that? Literally. You could feel it. You could feel the tension. It felt like you were like, oh shit, it's about to go down. And they're walking towards each other all menacingly, looking like they're for real about to fight. And the song goes on. And by the end of it, Perry Farrell and Ice-T are, you know, arm in arm, embracing each other, singing. The crowd's going fucking berserk. It was incredible. It's funny because I hear all this stuff now. Oh, everybody was so racist in the 90s. It's better today because everybody's not as racist. Bullshit. There's more racism right now today than there was in the 90s. Where's that kind of thing now? It doesn't exist. I mean, where are the tours like what I saw in the 90s? I saw Primus, Anthrax, and Public Enemy in the same show in the 90s. Where are those tours now? You'd never see a hard rock band or a heavy metal band touring with an alternative band and a hip-hop band today, but why not? Isn't that the kind of unity that we could use right now? But oh, no, because they don't want to bring people together. They'll talk all that shit about wanting to bring people together. No. It's horseshit. They want to divide people, and they want to keep us divided against each other so we're not united against them. I know I've said that 1,000 times, but it deserves to be said again. It's facts. I mean, yeah, dude. Primus, then Anthrax, and then Public Enemy comes out. Get up and get down. 911 is a joke in your town. It was fucking incredible, man, to see those three bands. I mean, talk about diversity. You don't get that. You can't get that kind of diversity now. You know, you would never see those. But why not? Oh, so we were more racist in the 90s than we are now. Okay. All right. Yeah, go keep on trying to spin that fucking lie. Ain't nobody buying that. Especially me, because I was there. And I saw black people and white people united. And, you know, there was no racism or division at all. And you'd see, you know, black guys in the mosh pit, up on hands, crowd surfing during Anthrax. And then you see white dudes jamming out to Public Enemy with the other black guys when they came on. I mean, I saw it. I was there. So don't fucking tell me that bullshit about things were more divisive in the 90s than they are now. Bullshit. It's bullshit. It's just lies. It's continued fucking lies. But yeah, man, that fucking... I'll play it again at the end of the show today. That Comfortably Numb Pink Floyd cover with Ice-T and Body Count, with Dave Gilmour on the guitar fucking shredding. Oh, my God. The other crazy wild cover I wasn't expecting last week that came out was the Willie Nelson covering Do You Realize by the Flaming Lips. I mean, it's so crazy for me. Because it just used to be so... I mean, me and my dad, I remember... Because my dad, you know, he was going to see all those outlaw guys back in the day, you know, in the 70s and stuff. And, you know, he played on stage with some of those guys. I mean, he, you know, that was my dad's era. You know, Willie, Waylon, David Allan Coe, all that. And in the 90s, you know, the Flaming Lips. I mean, I saw the Flaming Lips 47 times between the early 90s and early 2000s. Yeah. 47 times. And they're from Oklahoma. But they played their first gig ever in Dallas and stuff in the early 80s. But I was listening to the Flaming Lips one time. I remember my dad was later on. My dad was like, Josh, this is that weird music. I listen to that weird music. So I think it was I think it's hilarious now that my dad's golden god, Willie Nelson, is covering that weird music that Josh listens to. Oh, man. But, you know, I just see it the same as, I mean, Johnny Cash, at the end of his life, nobody saw that coming. Jerry, nobody saw that Johnny Cash would be covering 9-inch fucking Nails toward the end of his life. And, you know, everybody just accepts it now as like some, oh, it's so brave. And this, it wasn't considered brave at the time. I remember people were like, why the fuck is he doing this stupid devil music alternative crap? There was a lot of people, especially old line guys like my dad, who didn't like Hurt and all that stuff when it came out. It's now considered sacred cow material because of the passage of time, but it wasn't at the time. was not. But so now Willie Nelson's doing Flaming Lips covers. I'm just like, boy, if I had to make a list of things I didn't see coming, I for sure didn't see that coming. But yeah, and that Ice-T and Body Count. I'm just glad to see Ice-T and Body Count back out there doing it again. I love fucking Ice-T. I love Body Count. I love Ice-T. Is, you know, Ice-T was one of the, I mean, he doesn't really seem to get the credit as much for it now. I think just, I don't know, 25 years on Law and Order probably did that, but, or was it Law and Order he's on, or is it, I can't remember, SUV, SVU, whatever. But, I mean, you can't take away from IC the fact that he was one of the godfathers, one of the originators of gangster rap. I mean, he was. That first Ice-T album? Dude, get the fuck out of here. Are you kidding? That's one of the best hip-hop albums of the era, I believe. That first Ice-T album? Oh, yeah. To me, it was him and another guy that was from the same era as Ice-T. I think he may have actually came out of the same place. It was like him and Schoolie D. Schoolie D was like the, one of the first like gangster rap guys, too. But, I met Ice-T. I met him and I met Fishbone at Lollapalooza. And the guy, the black guy from Fishbone, he had a glass cane. It's one of the coolest things I've ever seen. When I met him, he said, "You want an autograph, man?" I go, "Man, honestly, I don't." I said, "All I really want more than anything else, bro, I just want to hold that glass cane." And he put his hands out, and he had the cane, you know, laying across his hands, and he put his hands out, and he goes, "There you go, sir." He put it out, and I took it, and I held it. It was beautiful, beautiful piece of art. Total fucking piece of glass. It was a cane. And I carefully handed it back to him. I said, "Thank you, man." He said, "Well, I'm at Ice-T." And I was just telling him how much I liked the body count album and stuff. And he put his arm around my neck and he like pulled me in. He said, "Let me tell you something, white boy." I thought he was going to whoop my ass or something. I was totally respectful, but he put it around my neck and he kind of put me in kind of a, you know, tight hold. And he was like, "Let me tell you something, white boy." I was like, "Yeah?" And he's like, "Listen, I just want you to know something." I was like, "All right." He's like, "Don't ever say the N word." I said, I won't. He goes, "But listen, I want you to hear this." I was like, "Okay. If you're singing my song and I say the N word in my song, you can say it, you can sing along. You don't have, you can sing it with me if you sing along with my song." I said, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah. You get a pass on that, white boy. But that's the only pass you ever gonna get, nigga. You hear me?" He called me in. I said, "Yes, sir, I hear you. I hear you. I ain't want none from Ice-T, man." It was a scary motherfucker in those days. He goes, "Shake my hand, wild boy." I shook his head. He goes, "All right, get the fuck out of here." I split. Went back into the fucking show. Lollapalooza. I don't know. So to this day, I follow that rule. If I'm singing the song and it says the word in it, I'm going to sing it. Because you know why? Because I see told me I could. Listen, Ice-T tells me something, I'm going to take that shit as gospel, fact, and law for the rest of my life. And I have. Oh, man. He pulled me in so tight. And he was close to me. He pulled me in so tight, I thought I was going to have my asshole, because he was like, "Let me tell you something, my boy." I was like, "Yeah." Man, a few years ago, I don't like going to comedy clubs by myself because oftentimes I don't have people to go with me, you know. because they need individual seating in comedy clubs. I don't know, maybe there are in other places, but here in Dallas, none of the comedy clubs here have individual seating. So if you want to go to a comedy show by yourself, you end up having to sit at a table with a bunch of other people, a bunch of other strangers and couples and stuff. It's uncomfortable as fuck. Last time I did it, I was about 3 or 4 years ago. It was before the pandemic, but I went and saw the black comedian, Miss Pat. I don't know if you know who she is. She's fucking hilarious. She's like the female Joey Diaz. She's fucking hilarious. But anyway, I went and saw Miss Pat. And it was at the club, the Addison Improv here in Dallas. And there were some white people there. I was the only white person. There were some white people there, but there was couples, you know, and they were sitting together and stuff. Well, I was, you know, by myself. So where did they sit me? They sent me right up front, right in front of Miss Pat, with two black couples. Dude, Miss Pat came out on stage, and she, I'm telling you, the second she walked down the stage, she zeroed in with laser beam eyes on me. So she's doing her bit and everything. She's, you know, telling Jay, she goes, y'all see this white boy down here? Look at this white boy down here. She kept coming after me. Like, she's like, this white boy down here, look like he's being held hostage by a bunch of niggas. Oh, the place erupted. She's like, blink twice, baby, if you need help. I got you. Blink twice. Oh, my fucking God. It was so fucking funny. I went up and talked to her after. She goes, baby, thank you so much for being a good sport tonight. She's like, I was not picking on you. I was like, Miss Pat. I get it. You don't have to say anything. I get it. I always say I stuck out like a sore thumb. She's like, oh, no, I just saw you down there. You just look, you know, they stuck you in there with a bunch of brothers. I just want to make sure you weren't mad at me because I was, you know, I kept talking about it. I was like, Miss Pat, if I come to your show, I know what I'm going to get. I was like, I would go through more than that to come see you, Miss Pat. She goes, oh, you would? Yeah, for sure. She goes, all right, baby, give me a hug. She gave me a big old hug. She was so sweet. So sweet. I love Miss Pat. Shout out to Miss Pat. She was fucking awesome. See, look at this white boy, Danny. Look at you being held hostage by a bunch of niggas. Oh my God, it was the hardest of the hardest I've ever been. The whole place is dying laughing. I mean, it's at my expense, but you know, whatever, I didn't care. It was a blink twice if you need help, baby, I got you. Oh man, oh, that was fucking hilarious. I'm not been back to a comedy show by myself since, all because, you know, the pandemic happened shortly after that and stuff, you know, so, but even still, oh man, it was so fucking funny. You made me realize it. Oh man, let's see what we got in godforsaken news tonight. I always hate these election years because all the news revolves around the election 24/7. You guys, if you listen to the show for a long time, know I just don't like to talk about that shit day in and day out during an election cycle. I just don't like to do it, so. Oh, this one was interesting. Interesting to me, especially since I made that Mandela Effect film this year. Scientists at CERN observe ultra-rare particle decay process, pointing to physics beyond the standard model. You Yeah, I don't know, dude. Seems to me that every time they do some new experiment with CERN, weird shit happens. The NA62 experiment at CERN, backed by researchers from Lancaster University, has observed a rare decay process happening in less than 1 in 10 billion charged kaons. This discovery, presented at CERN in a seminar on September 24, 2024, may shed light on breakthroughs in particle interactions beyond the standard model. Well, yeah, I mean, they've already proven that and found the standard physics model and everything, like Einstein, all that stuff's already been proven incorrect. Like I was saying yesterday, we think we know shit, we really don't know jack shit. And that's, you know, really what drives innovation. It's what drives progress. It's definitely what drives me. You know, I've been researching this stuff over 33 years. Have I ever sat back on my laurels and acted like I know it all? Hell no. I know more than most people will ever know on this stuff. But guess what? I always feel like I still got something to learn. I will never get to that point where I feel like, okay, I'm good. I know all I need to know and all I'll ever need to know. People do that. People do that just from graduating high school. And then if they go to university, then they think it even more. They go to university for 4 years. Oh, and then that's it. Their learning's over. It stops and ceases. They know everything they ever are going to need to know. And they certainly know more than you if they went to a four-year university. It's horseshit. If you are arrogant enough to think that you know all you're ever going to need to know and you can never learn more, you're a fool. They've got you by the balls and they've got you right where they want you. Well, that's not me, Jack. The first ever ultra-rare kaon decay was observed, occurring in fewer than 1 in 10 billion kaons. Potential new physics is indicated by decay rate 50% higher than the standard model predicts. The upgraded NA62 experiment allowed a 50% higher signal detection rate. Oh boy, listen, anytime they do anything with CERN, get ready for some wackiness. I already knew they were doing this shit because I told you when I made my Mandela Effect film I made this year, I was not on board with the Mandela Effect when it first started being talked about. I largely, after looking into it, just a cursory glance at it, was like, okay, this is, you know, I think this is it, and what I believe now, it's a mixture. It's, I thought it was just false memory, and that was it at first. It's not. It's partially that, for sure. For sure it is partially that. There is partially some false memory stuff going on. But there are other things. I mean, like the Sinbad movie one, like I told you, I mean, I know for a fact, I worked in a video store when that was out, and I remember stocking that on the shelves. The one that got me was when I experienced one this year. Then when I went and looked on the internet, everything that I originally saw was scrubbed. It was Kira Rossler. Kira Rossler from, she was the bass player for the band Black Flag. And a few years ago, I remember she died. She died of breast cancer. Shortly after winning a Grammy it was an Oscar. She won an Oscar for some soundtrack work she had done. And I remember she passed away. I was really sad, you know, because I was a big fan of her. I didn't even talk about her death here on the show when it happened. Because I talked about the Black Flag Live album, Who's Got the 10 and a Half? Who's got the 10 and a Half? Kira's got the 10 and a Half. Kira's got the 10 and a Half. Like, Kira's got the biggest dig in the band. You know, this is a joke. But she was smoking hot. But I remember when she died, how sad I was. And I listened to that album that day and everything. I put it on the turntable. Who's Got the 10.5 by Flag? And I was like, man, I was really sad that she died. And then this year I saw a post about her on Facebook. About how she was married to former Minutemen bassist Mike Watt. Mike Watt's been single his whole life. He's openly, I've met Mike Watt several times. He's, you know, guy's a proud lifelong bachelor. And I went, Kira died. I remember. That's not false memory. I wouldn't have just thought Kira Rossler died and celebrated her and mourned her by accident. I remember reading the news articles about it. They're all gone now, of course. And Kira's alive and well, and she's married to Mike Watt. What? What? That's when I knew. I was like, oh, this Mandela effect thing, there's something to it. It's real. So I'll put up that film this year, The Mandela Effect, Factor Patient. If you haven't seen it, get it. I got to get up bright and early in the morning. I hate doing radio early in the morning. It's my least favorite time to do radio. This kind of shit should be talked about late at night. You know, that's what was always great about Coast to Coast AM. If you want to hear about this shit late at night, you don't want to fucking be... I don't want to be talking about this shit early in the morning, but I got to do two-hour interviews the next 3 weeks with Richard Serrett. None of it is on any of my recent releases. He picked, you know, I put out 25 films this year, so these are the three he picked. So this week we're doing 2 hours on Illuminated, The Illuminati, Some Fact, Some Fiction. Next week we're doing 2 hours on Operation Mongoose, Kennedy, the Mafia, and the CIA, which is another film I came out with this year. Get a copy of that one. And then the week after that, we're doing 2 hours on The Inside World, my Inner Earth film from this year. So, believe me, I will be sliding in some references to Mononoke the movie in there, I'm sure. So, and then after that, that's it. I'm not doing any more interviews. I'm going back into my interview retirement for a while. I retired this year from doing those interviews because they just... But it's a broken model anymore. It just doesn't work. You know, the host and the show gets to monetize my appearances with ad money and get ad money from it that I don't see a dime from. And then I go on there and they hardly give me an opportunity to even promote my films. You know, past two times I went on Coast to Coast AM, I sold like 2 or 3 copies tops from those appearances. So I was like, okay, no more. I'm not going to waste my time going on these fucking stupid shows anymore where they get to monetize them and make money off of them, and then I get nothing. Talk shows are supposed to be about you have something to promote, you promote it, people buy it, and it's you provide them with an appearance, and that, you know, it's a quid pro quo type situation, but not anymore. Whew. I'm exhausted, man. That food poisoning thing I had, man, it really did something to me. It was beyond just food poisoning. I've had food poisoning. Food poisoning doesn't linger around. There was some sort of pathogen involved in that. I thought I had Ebola or something, really. My body is still recovering from it. I still don't feel right, but anyway, I'm getting better, and that is, you know. I'm just worn out. I'm just exhausted. I it's going to be a little bit, at least until next month, probably towards the end of next month, I do anything else. I've done enough already, and enough people haven't even bought what I've made this year. On top of the 25 films, I've done volumes A through N of the Reeves Encyclopedia of Conspiracy. I am going to be continuing and adding the third chapter of my William Cooper Mystery Babylon series. That'll be coming out soon. So get the first two volumes now on the downloads for BM. Plus all the Josh Watches I've done this year. Josh Watches The Irishman. Josh Watches Oliver Stone's JFK. Josh Watches The Good Shepherd. Josh Watches Men Who Stare Goats. All those are in the downloads for now. Get copies, all right? And again, this is our 17-year anniversary week. Thursday is the actual 17-year anniversary. And I couldn't do it without you guys, and I still can't. And the information is the most important link in the chain. The second most important link in that chain is you and your contributions and buying the work that I make, okay? And right now, I'm just trying to be able to get some food, so buy downloads, get on and argue the movie, get the simulation theory. Just everybody buy some downloads this week, okay, guys? All right, we'll see you next time. You guys take care. Oh, here's Ice-T and Body Count with Dave Gilmour on guitar doing Pink Floyd's Comfortably Numb.
keep you all alive. For some reason I still care. I've done my dirt, it's amazing that I'm still here. There's true evil out there, I've been trying to warn you. You can meet the devil himself, then what you gonna do? No time to pray, no chance to run, listen. Cause I've been on both sides of the gun. As you stand before me, we're all here as one. We gotta come together, or our chances are none. Maybe I'm just a dreamer, too many obstacles. The thought of humans coexisting, that's impossible. Better to stay numb, live in denial. We're all going to hell and did it to ourselves.